sounds good. I like that. Let that roll.
Yeah, I don't know that importing seawater and growing crops that grow in salt-based water is going to be a long-term solution. Like you said, what is that going to do to the soil?
Well, let's just grow it where the seawater is then. If the stuff will grow in seawater, let's just grow it where we have the seawater. Why bring the seawater? Why take the money and energy and cost that it costs to transport the seawater anywhere?
His thought was...
I would think it'd be cheaper to just grow it there and ship the plants. But
yeah. His thought was that it would take agricultural's demand off the CAP off. But like you said, what's that going to do piping that in? I mean, what kind of infrastructure is that going to take? The amount of energy it takes to operate CAP is something we'll be covering in the water month. And one of the sessions I was sitting in, kind of both of these topics tie in. One was, why aren't we doing more desalination? And it's just the cost of energy to desalinate.
It takes a ton of electricity to do it.
And what does it take to make electricity? A ton of water.
or fossil fuels or whatever. Yeah, it's not an easy solution.
One other concept was to prevent evaporation and create more energy with solar panels, covering the entire CAP canal in the solar panels. Now, I don't know what that would cost, but that's an interesting thing to think about.
Theory. I saw, was it a few years ago, did you have a thing where they took some reservoirs and they were putting rubber balls or something in the reservoirs to kind of cover the surface with some type of little ball or something? So, using those spaces that are non-productive to kind of give us a double advantage might it's, again, necessity is the mother of invention. Somebody will come up with solutions to these problems, which are actual opportunities, right?
And I've got that gentleman's card with the balls, and he was selling it at the Farm Bureau's annual conference a year or two ago to ranchers as a concept to prevent evaporation, but that the animals could still come in and they learn quickly just how to still
push
the ball
through it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And get their water.
Yeah, sure.
Every little drop counts, and one of the biggest back of the mind thing is, you know, we've got to solve this before more regulation hits, because that's the last thing anybody wants to happen is regulation. So everyone's working to conserve that.
If you can not have somebody else tell you how to do it, it's always better.
And more sustainable,
yes.
Long term. Those forced solutions are never, they're quick fix solutions. They're never long term.
Yeah, typically it's a lot easier if you can take care of it yourself.
So, switching that conversation to a high water using topic, well, a lot of lawns are going to be going in here shortly.
Yeah, it's tomorrow's first day of September, and that means that we'll be thinking about transitioning to winter lawns here shortly. Although I would not be in any big hurry. You will see, some golf courses, some big turf areas here in the next couple of weeks start scalping their lawns, and those folks have to do that earlier than they would even like. If you were to ask them when they would prefer to do it, they don't prefer to do it that earlier. But the fact it's an economic situation for them that when October hits, they want to be ready to have golfers be able to play and not lose a couple 3 weeks in October. So they kind of get out ahead of it, and they deal with the problems associated with that, as they can, and it's expensive sometimes to deal with those. So for the homeowner, I wouldn't even think about it till the middle of October. Just kind of carry on. I mean, there's some things you can do that will help your lawn be maybe more apt to go through that process better, just making sure you have a good, healthy lawn right now, number one. Maybe not fertilizing again now. If you're going to plant a winter lawn, I probably wouldn't feed it again. If you're not going to plant a winter lawn, I would feed it at least one more time. Keep it going as long as you can while it's actively growing. If you're going to do it, don't fertilize it. Maybe actually here for the next couple of weeks, raise your mowing height on your lawn a little bit. Let it get a bit, little bit longer, thicker, lusher, so that when, you know, it has more ability to store up more carbohydrates in the root system before you scalp it and put it to bed. So a couple of things. And then don't do the big dry out the week before you're going to scalp it. You know, maybe a couple of days before, but don't stress it. You're already going to stress it enough by scalping it before it's truly going dormant. So don't stress it anymore. You know, maybe turn the scalping wet grass is not fun. I understand, but you know, it only takes a day or two to dry a lawn out here typically. So just don't do that too far ahead of time.
And there was a lot of new technologies on irrigation timers. Do you know anything about this new two wire versus traditional wire?
I don't.
That's something I'm going to be looking into more, but they're talking about it being able to go a 6 mile loop on a single irrigation system with this new two wires. Sounded pretty interesting. Not something that's going to apply to most homeowners, but you know, our big water users are a lot of municipalities and freeways and
parks, freeways, golf courses. Sure.
But whatever happens commercially, eventually down the line, you see end up in residential as it becomes the new standard. There's a lot of interchange between, you know, a smart system that was the first thing they started talking about was just because you have a smart irrigation timer doesn't mean you have a smart irrigation system. You know, you've still got to have, it's not just a slap and stick a new timer on it and you've got this great system.
Well, and people need to look at their sprinkler heads, and we need to start seriously considering everybody going to the low volume delivery heads, you know, the ones that look like little fingers or streams of water that rotate out there because they're not affected by wind. They put water only, you know, and they're more able to put water only where it should go. You don't get the water spraying out into the sidewalks and into the gutters. So there's a lot of things, you know. It's not just the timer, you know. The water then has to go through pipes. Is your piping sufficient? And then are your delivery devices, the heads and the emitters and all of those, the right size? And do you have the right amount? And are they putting water where it needs to go? So it all fits. It all fits together, and it's all got to, you know, be in a contiguous plan and system for it to really work the way it should.
And Hunter had one of their product lines, HydroWise, has predictive watering. So it communicates to weather services on the internet. And what you're, you know, when you first plug in, it's not going to have a lot of data because it doesn't have any watering history. But as you use it over time, it predicts, okay, if it's this hot on this day, here's how much water we put on it. This one valve in the past, and this valve might be on your shrubs, and then this is your valve for the trees, and it helps you predict what your watering is going to be. But that's going to change a lot of things if we've got a chronicle history of data.
Yeah, it's like your TV, you know, says, well, you watch this, so you might also like this or something like that. So yeah, it's kind of that intelligence that's stored up. That yeah, any of that's going to help for sure.
Now, how deep are we watering? That was a big topic, and I've got a soil probe I bought recently at Fisher Tools, and this thing's like 4 feet, a 4 foot probe. And there's a couple places. It's funny. I've got multiple drips around the citrus tree, but you know, you can go right on top of where one of the heads, drip heads are, and that thing will sink all the way to the handle, and then you can go in the middle of around the
right,
the drip edge, and push it, and it doesn't go at all.
So you have to have the proper amount of heads so that you're getting water displaced all, you know, all around the drip line of the tree. But water does also move horizontally through the soil structure if you let it run long enough. So we had your mom just sent us a little picture of a guy with some ash trees that, you know, he's had a struggle with, whether we don't know that he planted them or when he planted them and that sort of thing. But, you know, he's talking about watering them for 35 minutes, enough to fill the wells. Well, you look at the wells and they're maybe 4 inches, you know, deep around this tree. And the problem with that is if you fill that 4-inch well up with water, you know, how far does that water and how much of it actually percolates and versus evaporates? My guess is it's only getting down maybe a foot or so. In a, you know, in a large tree like that, we probably need to be 3 or 4 feet deep with the water. So we've got to put water on really only about as fast as it can be accepted by the soil. So that's where drip systems come into play. They put water on very slowly, but you have to then do the math. That head's only putting on a couple of gallons an hour, and it takes 100 gallons of water to get the water down to where we need it. Well, if you've got one head at 2 gallons an hour and you want to put 100 gallons of water in there, you know, you've got to run it for
2 days and an hour.
Yeah, so there you go. So
two
you
days
need,
and 2 hours.
So you can then add heads and add, you know, maybe you've got 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 heads and spread them out, and that reduces, but it's still hours and not minutes. And then the frequency comes into play, which then we adjust seasonally. So I tell people you really should never adjust the duration of your watering. You should adjust the frequency of your watering, because it takes pretty much just as long in December to get water down 3 or 4 feet deep as it does in June or July, but it doesn't need the frequency at those times of the month. So that's, you know, it's hours, not minutes. Just think that. And you know, somebody told me like a little rule of thumb, 1, 2, 3. So little plants, little ground covers and flowers and annuals and small perennials, the water needs to be about a foot deep. For larger shrubs and hedges and things that are bigger type shrubbery, Texas sage and our bigger shrubs, foundation shrubs, maybe 2 feet deep. And trees, you know, at least 3 feet deep. So that's
that, 1, 2, 3. I like that.
That little handout, or you can go online and get it from AMWA, that Water Use It Wisely, the Landscape Watering by the Numbers, has a great step-by-step process that you can go through and find out based on the size of the plant and the type of the plant, a guideline. It's not set in stone of how long you need to water to get water to a certain depth and how frequently you need to do that.